Coming up on New York Now, how big of a tree is too big to cut down in the forest preserve? We'll take a look in this week's feature story.
So this is very illustrative of what the forest looks like before they even start cutting. And it won't take very long to follow their line. Right here is the beginning. And it's not gonna take very long where you can't even see me. This is an intact forest, uncut, filled with big trees and little trees.
And Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio and Jimmy Vielkind of the Wall Street Journal join us at the Reporters Roundtable. New York Now is next, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program, this is New York Now.
Hi, everyone. I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks for tuning in to us here on New York Now. Before we head to the Adirondacks for our feature story, we're going to start the program off at the Reporters Roundtable, where my partner from the Times Union, Casey Seiler, will lead the discussion.
I'm very happy to be joined by my friend Jimmy Vielkind of the Wall Street Journal and my other friend Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio.
You have two friends. You're lucky.
Exactly. that's it, unfortunately. Speaking of third parties, the Conservative Party and the Working Families Party do not have much in common, but this week what they have in common is a lawsuit that was brought against the state, against the governor and the attorney general for the passage of a bill that creates a panel that is supposed to be charged with coming up with a system of publicly financed elections. And as a little kind of side dish, it will also consider the potential end of fusion voting, which of course is the system that allows third party candidates, or rather third parties, to adopt the candidates of the major parties.
Yep, known as cross endorsement. You're a Democrat, you can also run on the Working Families Party. You're a Republican, you can also run on the conservative line. And that keeps these minor parties alive because that enables them to get enough votes in a statewide election that they don't have to go through the petition process. Because the petition process is super cumbersome. You have to get all kinds of signatures all over the state, and it essentially relegates minor parties into oblivion. So they have this common interest. They want to stay alive, and much has been made about the fact that they're opposite ends of the political spectrum, but this is something they have a common interest in.
Yeah, fusion voting is one of those weird things that makes New York the Empire State. So its roots are actually back in the days of Tammany Hall and the real robust Democratic political machines, because the only way you could beat Tammany is if one candidate was on the socialist line and the American Worker line and the Republican line and the something or other line. And we think about Fiorello LaGuardia. People don't realize he was a Republican, but he ran on this fusion ticket, and he was able to beat the Democratic candidate for mayor. So that's why fusion voting was first implemented. Mm-hmm. In the modern era, what we've seen are these parties purposefully formed, and I'm thinking about, as you mentioned, Karen, both the Working Families Party on the left and the Conservative Party on the right, purposely formed to try and drag the major parties more to the extremes, try to drag the major parties to their left and right flank, respectively speaking. At this point, the Democrats are quite upset with the Working Families Party because in the 2018 elections, it was the WFP and the Democratic Socialists of America, which is not a political party, but which is just sort of an organization, that really supported a lot of these anti-incumbent challengers. The fear is that that's going to repeat itself for 2020. And so this tug of war that's going to happen possibly in this electoral commission is of an existential nature for the minor parties, hence this lawsuit, even though the commission has not yet done anything, said anything, or even has an explicit mandate to address fusion voting.
And also, more importantly, maybe, is the Working Families Party backed Cynthia Nixon, Cuomo's rival in the Democratic primary. And both the Conservative Party and Working Families Party believe this is a vendetta by Governor Cuomo against working families, because even though he won with two-thirds of the vote in the Democratic primary, you can tell he still hasn't gotten over that. And he was, you know, that really annoyed him that he would have to deal with this with the left of his own party.
Well, one thing that these third parties are very upset about and were very vocal about is the appointment of Jay Jacobs, who is Governor Cuomo's hand-picked chair of the state Democratic Committee, to be a member of this panel. And he is a rock-ribbed opponent of fusion voting going back at least a decade.
Yeah.
And that has been seen by many as essentially not killing your opponent yourself, but hiring a hitman to do it.
That's right. And it seems like these commissions, they start out with an idea of how they're going to end up. I'm trying not to say these commissions are fixed, but they have like an
fixed
idea. We saw that with the pay raise commission last year. It ended up being what Governor Cuomo wanted, and that's what they're afraid is going to happen. And it is kind of a disturbing trend that these big issues are not taken up by the legislature and the governor, but sent out to some commission with appointees. This commission hasn't met yet. We haven't heard anything about public hearings, and they're supposed to report back by December 1st. So are we going to not hear from them until December 1st, and then it's a fait accompli?
Well, that's the other thing, is that there are already several pending lawsuits to the commission that fixed executive and legislative compensation, the first of which was sustained on behalf of the plaintiffs, and some of its recommendations for raises were thrown out. So it's this idea that you just mentioned, Karen, of delegating authority to a commission that should traditionally lie with the legislature. We're going to see some jurisprudence this year coming out of that, which I think will affect policy in a number of ways, and I think will affect the way the legislature approaches its job in the 2020 session, regardless of your thoughts on fusion voting.
Jimmy, you did a story in the Wall Street Journal this week on the SAM party, which is the New York offshoot of the Serve America movement, a third party that did not avail itself of fusion voting in the case of the last gubernatorial election. They ran Stephanie Miner, former Syracuse mayor, as their gubernatorial candidate and made the hurdle that Karen was referring to of 50,000 votes.
That's right. And what that means is that they now have a very valuable political asset, an automatic ballot line in every election in the state. Normally, a political party like the Libertarians for many years, like the Green Party for many years, you can be a political party. You can get on the ballot for the mayor of East Aurora, say, or the town supervisor of Clifton Park, but you have to carry petitions and essentially create your own party's line each time. Once you have the instant ballot line, it's much, much, much easier to fill candidates. So the SAM party, they sound very Bloombergian, that is to refer to former Mayor Michael Bloomberg, in that they talk a lot about common sense solutions, data-driven practices. Some of the people who are advising the party worked with Bloomberg, and they also have sort of ties to the Republican Party. So I was very interested to see what the SAM party will become, whether it will end up sort of leaning more to the right, more to the left, whether it will be perhaps a vehicle for someone in the 2021 mayoral election in New York City who might feel blocked in a crowded Democratic field, but like Mike Bloomberg, might want to run as a centrist, but not necessarily be on the Republican line in New York in 2021, 2019, in the era of Donald Trump. So it's an interesting party, still figuring itself out, and forming a small slate for the 2019 elections.
Yeah, I was thinking that too after I read your article. It could be someone who doesn't check all the boxes. Say you're a Republican who's pro-choice, you're a Democrat who isn't all that crazy about gun control. This would be an avenue, or maybe even looking ahead to 2022 in the governor's race, and maybe here would be another challenge to Governor Cuomo's plans to run and win for a fourth term, especially if they engaged in fusion voting, if it hasn't been outlawed by them. But I wonder, though, I mean, they're supposed to be more moderate, more reasonable.
This is not a time in American political life that seems to advantage that
kind
of
approach. It seems like the pendulum swung way against that. But eventually it'll swing back. Who knows if it'll be in time for them, though.
There was another legal challenge this week, this time to the green light bill that will make driver's licenses available or at least eligible to undocumented immigrants. This one brought in Rensselaer County, just where actually we are sitting right now.
That's right. Rensselaer County Clerk Frank Merola, he's well known for people who followed this fight. He battled Elliot Spitzer back in 2007 when former Governor Elliot Spitzer wanted to give the immigrants the driver's licenses. And you could say he won that battle because Spitzer, you know, withdrew his proposal, and now he's doing the same thing, filing a lawsuit saying it's unconstitutional under the federal government. I can't give undocumented immigrants driver's licenses. And Merola, if you speak to him, he'll say, over and over, I'm not anti-immigrant. My wife is a naturalized citizen, but I don't believe in people who came in, what he would say, illegally, should get the driver's licenses. And he's, you know, pretty outspoken about that and has really heated up the debate on this.
Republicans see this as a winning political issue for them, particularly upstate, in upstate New York and on Long Island in suburban areas. It's no act of chance that the six Democratic senators from Long Island voted against the bill that would grant undocumented immigrants access to state driver's licenses. So these lawsuits will keep the issue alive. It will keep it in the headlines. And Republicans are hoping it will sort of whip up their base going into the 2020 elections.
Jimmy, there is more fallout this week from the blackout 2 weeks ago in Midtown Manhattan, with a lot of people talking tough, including the governor, about Con Ed's franchise.
That's right. We had calls from Mayor de Blasio, Governor Cuomo. There are state senators who are calling for a potential for hearings. You know, it's summertime, the living's easy, but the temperature rises, air conditioning goes on, and the electrical grid gets strained. Sometimes you have blackouts. Governor Cuomo has said that that's not an acceptable situation. And like any politician who wants to shoot a layup, it's easy to beat up on a public utility. So the Public Service Commission, which is independent and regulates utility franchises, is looking at what happened, doing an investigation. There's the possibility of some kind of sanctions up to and including taking away Con Ed's franchise, though observers don't see that as
But the Public Service Commission, who appoints the people on the Public Service Commission? I mean, you could make the argument that Cuomo's been in office for 8 years now, and perhaps they could have been looking more into what Con Ed was doing, and, you know, and all the utilities they regulate. Ultimately, the utilities have to answer to the government. But yeah, the climate's getting hotter. This was record use. People have just so many more electronic things. It's just, you know, reaching a crisis point. We're seeing that.
And finally, the governor signed a bill that will create a panel that will look at the potential implications of artificial intelligence and robotics. Jimmy, did the fact that Cyborg from the future did not appear to prevent the governor from signing a bill means that the Terminator is not going to happen?
I think that that was a sign that I took, but it's only a matter of time, Casey, before Skynet becomes self-aware. And I think we need to have a state panel to look at it and develop policies to prevent it from killing us all.
All right. On that note, I would very much like to thank Jimmy Vielkind from the Wall Street Journal, the first person to use the adjective Bloombergian on this program, and Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio. And now we'll kick it back to Matt at the desk.
All right. Thanks, Casey. An environmental group scored a big victory earlier this month on a case that's been in the court system for years that involves a very important question for all parties involved.
What is a tree? We don't mean to get all existential on you, but it's at the very heart of a lawsuit in the Adirondacks. Going way back to the end of the George Pataki administration, the Department of Environmental Conservation and Office of Parks and Recreation released the snowmobile plan for the Adirondack Park in 2006. Included in this final environmental impact statement was a proposal for the establishment of community connector trails. The thought was to link up a series of towns for snowmobilers with a chance for the areas to gain some economic benefit. The plan was touted as staying consistent with Article 14 of the state's constitution, better known as the Forever Wild Clause. One environmental advocacy group, though, didn't see it that way.
You know, this is what that trail looked like. You know, it was an intact forest. That's what the trail looked like. It had a series of larger trees, it had a series of smaller trees, and it had a lot of ground cover, tons of witch hobble, ferns, trillium, on the understory. All of that is then obliterated as they build the trail. And you can see when we get back up here, the understory has been completely changed. They put down straw and all of this grass. There's no grass in the forest. There's no grass up here. But all of this grass has been allowed to grow because they've completely changed this forest corridor into a long grassy strip. They've poked holes in the canopy, which allows the sun to come in. So it's a fundamental change of the forest character.
Peter Bauer is the executive director of Protect the Adirondacks. The organization brought a lawsuit against the state regarding the snowmobile plan back in 2013. They had two arguments. One, the roughly 12-foot wide trails violated the state land master plan. And two, the number of trees being cut down exceeded what is allowed under Article 14. Fast forward to 2017. After a trial, a state Supreme Court judge in Albany dismissed both aspects of the lawsuit, saying the community connector trails, quote, are no more out of harmony with forest lands in their wild state than the foot, horse, and bicycle trails throughout the preserve, unquote. Protect the Adirondacks appealed the decision and on July 3rd of this year received better news. While an appellate court agreed with the 2017 decision that the construction of the trails did not violate the Constitution, they sided with the environmental group that too many trees would be cut down in what ended up as a 4-1 decision. Which gets us back to our original question. What is a tree? Or maybe better yet, what is timber? A clause in Article 14 says timber shall not be sold, removed, or destroyed. The DEC in its snowmobile plan counted timber as 3 inches or greater in diameter at breast height. If that's the case, the agency estimated around 6,100 trees would be removed.
We have a big, large diameter tree here, about 10 inches in diameter. You have a large diameter tree here, about 13 inches in diameter. But then you've got small tree, small tree, small tree.
Protect the Adirondacks argued that wasn't a fair way to judge what's in the forest preserve. So after the cutting and grading of the initial trails began earlier this decade, Peter Bauer went out and documented the aftermath by snapping thousands and thousands of photographs.
Our argument is that there are lots of trees of smaller diameter that have an important ecologic function, important forest ecology function that also need to be counted. So we documented trees of all sizes because many trees that are 1 inch or 2 inches in diameter, they could be 40, 50 feet, 60 feet tall, and they could be 50, 60, 70, 80 years old or older. And we were able to document a number of cases where that was true. This is the forest of the future, and a lot of these trees, when you actually count the rings and you see how tight the rings are, they could be a small diameter tree that's 50, 60, 75, 100 years old. So a tree that is 100 years old is an important tree in the history of the forest preserve because the whole purpose of the forest preserve is to allow wild nature.
If you count the smaller trees as Protect the Adirondacks is doing, they say the number being eliminated balloons to 25,000. It was a compelling enough argument that in 2016, an appellate court judge slapped an injunction on any future cutting.
So now we're at a disturbed area of over 20 feet.
On a blistering hot summer day, Bauer, along with his dog Clover, took us out to three different sections of the trail. Here in Newcomb, we saw a portion of the finished trail, a few miles down the road, with the black flies nipping at every area of exposed skin, we saw a section that was cut but not graded. Finally, we saw where the cutting stopped when the injunction was put in place. Bauer says this was a good way of seeing what exactly the forest is losing when one of the snowmobile trails is being created.
So this is very illustrative of what the forest looks like before they even start cutting. And it won't take very long to follow their line. Right here is the beginning. And it's not gonna take very long where you can't even see me. This is an intact forest. Uncut. Filled with big trees and little trees.
Bauer says the injunction left the DEC design trail here in the Central Adirondacks about 4 miles short of completion. The New York State Snowmobiling Association, as you would imagine, was not happy with the mid-level court's recent decision.
But the announcement itself was a little bit surprising, and of course we're very disappointed in the decision. The court took an approach that we really didn't anticipate them taking, basically changing the definition of timber one that had been established in case law several times in the past. The case that kind of leads everybody is McDonald, which was back in the 1930s. And that case decided that the cutting of 3,000 trees for, I believe it was the then Winter Olympics, was too many trees to cut. And in that case, they used timber as 3 inches in diameter at breast height. So we felt that was what the department has used for decades. And it's pretty well established in precedent.
Peter Bauer points out there is already an extensive and popular network of trails in the Tug Hill Plateau and Old Forge, where thanks to lake effect snow, the season is long and popular with snowmobilers. But Dominic Jackangelo says there is a missed opportunity for riders in the eastern part of the park.
I think if the connections are made, there's a new snowmobile experience. Folks from the Albany area, instead of heading over on the thruway over to Tug Hill, we'll head straight up the Northway, park at North Hudson, where the state has now invested millions in a campground, and drop their sleds there and head over to Newcomb and over to Indian Lake, and then take the long loop back and come back up Scroon Lake and end up back there. A different experience.
Stephen Aquario of the New York State Association of Counties calls the recent court decision a setback for New Yorkers and the towns that surround the trail.
This was a trail program planned by experts at the State Department of Environmental Conservation, whose job is to preserve the constitutional job of preserving the forest for the people of future generations, for us now and for the people of future generations. That's the constitutional responsibility here of the Department of Environmental Conservation, and so too with the local governments who worked in harmony with the State Department of Environmental Conservation. To receive this news that timber now is going to be classified as brush almost, or small twigs or small trees, a few feet in height and dimensions, is almost unconscionable to interpret timber that way.
As is the case for most of these decisions involving the Adirondack Park, it comes down to weighing the benefits of a possible significant increase in dollars for local communities to maintaining the original intent of the Forever Wild Clause.
We don't need to build trails that have enormous, that are inflicting enormous environmental damage and actually provide very little marginal economic benefit. Most of these trails, the state will never recoup the investment. You know, the hundreds of thousands of dollars and millions of dollars to build these trails, you'll never see economic activity that comes anywhere close to repaying that.
Protect the Adirondacks and the state have until mid-August to file an appeal. Next stop could be New York's highest court, where maybe we'll get a better definition of what exactly constitutes a tree.
Whether the decision's good or bad for us, we'll have a decision that we can use to measure future projects. And maybe it'll have a little more definition to what is too many trees when we go to create a trail. With this decision, there's ramifications that go across a lot of different projects. And I think that's one of the reasons it needs to be appealed.
That leads us to this week's New York Now poll question. Should a tree in the Adirondack Forest Preserve with a diameter of less than 3 inches be cut for a snowmobile trail? Let us know at nynow.org. Last week we asked, how likely is it you will place a sports bet at a local casino now that it's legal? And our viewers overwhelmingly said it was unlikely. Tom in Monroe County, watching on WXXI, told us, I would rather pay higher taxes. There's no issue of addiction with that. Patricia in Vestal, watching in the Southern Tier on WSKG, told us, I didn't do sports betting before, and I don't see the need to now that it's locally available. And finally, Peter in Westchester County, watching on WNET, said, probably on some future events. If you can now bet on sports, horse racing from different tracks online, what about online poker? Thanks to everyone who took the time to log on and vote. We always appreciate it. Again, to vote this week, head to nynow.org. There you can find all of our past programs, plus links to us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
where our handle is @NYNOW_PBS.
You can read more about those stories at my Papers Outstanding Capital Confidential blog or by going to timesunion.com.
All right, Casey, this coming week is a big one for two New Yorkers, Bill de Blasio, the mayor of New York City, and Kirsten Gillibrand, the junior U.S. senator. This is kind of their last chance to make a big splash in the Democratic debates because as of right now, they don't come close to meeting the threshold for the next round, which is going to be in September.
Right. If you watch the promos for the CNN debates, it's almost like a disaster film, like one of those movies with like a huge cast and they introduce everybody. Gillibrand and de Blasio are, as you know, both up against it. Interestingly, Gillibrand is hosting a fundraiser, a small one, in Rensselaer County on Sunday, which I believe is her first since she announced her campaign here in the Capital Region way back in the wintertime.
And de Blasio at 0%, Gillibrand at 0%. One of the thresholds you have to meet is you have to be at 2% in four different polls. And like I said, they're nowhere close to that right now.
Right, yeah, time is running out. Time is running out for us as well. We send you off today with footage from the Old Forge area. I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union.
And I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time right here on your local PBS station. Hi, everyone. I'm Matt Ryan. If you like what you hear, rate and review us right on your mobile device. When you do so, it makes it a little easier for people trying to find us. And thanks so much for listening to the New York Now podcast.